Thanks, Ian. All right, our next paper is entitled Lunar Rock and Mineral Character Consortium by Isaacson and a host of co-authors, and the speech will be given by Peter Isaacson.
Thank you, and I want to thank the conveners here for allowing me to participate in this session, because I can't think of a more appropriate place to present this material, because it really is in preparation for the next era in lunar science. I just want to talk today about a project we have going on with a suite of lunar basalts, which is, like I said, in preparation for the next generation of lunar science. And before I get started, I just want to acknowledge these series of co-authors, both in the spectroscopy group at Brown and the petrology group at Tennessee, making this possible. What we're after really here today, or eventually with this project, is the surface mineralogy of the moon, which is a key to understanding lunar geology as a whole. We're using visible and near-infrared reflectance spectroscopy because the major lunar rock-forming minerals have diagnostic absorptions in this wavelength region, which I'm showing down here, and it offers some of the highest spatial resolution compositional data that we can obtain from orbit. In this study, we're after ground-truth lunar materials. We have some data, I should have said, we have some data now for global. I'm showing you a Clementine ratio image here, mosaic, and we're soon to have much better data, both from the spectral profiler on Kaguya and M-cubed on Chandrayaan 1. A robust suite of ground truth materials ultimately should include rocks, minerals, and soils, so the whole range of materials that we see on the surface of the moon. Speaking of soils, this project follows off of a similar project devoted to lunar soils, named the Lunar Soil Characterization Consortium. You'll notice the symmetry in the names here. The LSCC focused on a suite of lunar soil samples which were sieved to specific size fractions and covered a range of compositions and maturities. And I'm showing some of the spectra that were collected in that study. These are the basaltic soils, but there were also highlands and some Apollo 14 soils as well. This study conducted coordinated mineralogy and petrology and spectroscopy analyses, and we're doing roughly the same thing for this study, except focusing on the unweathered component of the sample collection, rocks and associated mineral separates. So far, we've worked on four basalt slabs and paired thin sections. The slabs were used to prepare mineral separates, and the thin sections were used to conduct the coordinated petrology and mineralogy examinations. We have two low titanium basalts and two high titanium basalts, and I'm listing the mineral separates that were prepared from these samples. I don't want to go through every single one of them, but roughly we have a couple of pyroxenes, plagioclase, olivine in one case, and a few ilmenites in the case of the high titanium samples. Quickly, I want to just run through some of the petrology, mineralogy, and petrology results from the thin sections. We're working on a manuscript right now, and I'll present all of this data in detail in there, so if you want to go through this in detail, I urge you to look for that. The Apollo 15 samples are shown here on the left and the Apollo 17 on the right. Pyroxene compositions, plagioclase compositions, AN number, and then olivine compositions in the last histogram there. And these are, I'm sorry that some of these figures are going to get cut off, but these are sort of plain polarized light transmitted images for each sample, and then a small plot of the bulk sample reflectance spectrum. One example of the compositional results from the mineral separates, we have this data for every one of our samples. I don't have time to go through it in a lot of detail. The separates were picked from the bulk sample. A grain mount was prepared from a small subset of those samples, and the compositional range of those mineral separates was checked by microprobe analysis of that thin section, or not of that thin, of that grain mount, sorry, excuse me. The compositions of the mineral separates reflect the results from the thin section analyses, and we've also done modal abundance measurements based on automated point counting routines at the University of Tennessee. Like I said, we have this data for all of the samples, and I don't have time to go through this in detail. Like I said, we have a manuscript in preparation where all of this data will be laid out in great detail. And you should note that we only have the one olivine sample here for the mineral separates, because this was the only sample we were able to get a quality separate of olivine from. So Ryan made a crack about squiggly lines earlier. I promise I'll show you plenty. Hopefully just enough to saturation, not too many more. These are the near-infrared bidirectional reflectance spectra from our mineral separates and our samples. These have been sieved to less than 125 micron grain size. And you're seeing the Apollo 15 samples here on the left and the Apollo 17 on the right. The legend is down there on the lower right. The bulk samples are in sort of the heavy dark lines, and our mineral separates are labeled by color. A couple of major features I just want to point out quickly. The bulk samples you'll see are dominated strongly by pyroxenes. This is not a surprise. It's the dominant optical phase here in this wavelength region. Certainly in the bulk sample spectra, and even in some of the pyroxene mineral separate spectra, we see evidence for multiple absorption features, particularly out in the 2-micron region here. These pyroxenes show 1.2 micron absorption features, and it's unfortunate that Rachel wasn't able to attend today because she is really the person to talk to about those features and what sort of things you can infer from them. We have one olivine spectrum, one olivine sample, and you can see it has the characteristic olivine absorptions in 1 micron, but it has this unusual absorption out at long wavelength, which we're attributing to spinel inclusions. Our plagic clays have relatively strong features because these have fairly high iron contents. These are, in some cases, on the order of half a weight percent iron in these plagic clay samples, but that can tend to be lost when you see the bulk spectrum. The features here are almost entirely due to pyroxene absorptions. And in the case of this olivine-rich basalt, we can see a very pronounced absorption in the bulk sample spectrum. That's predominantly due to olivine. And now I want to zoom in a little bit on the visible region for these high titanium basalts, because there's some interesting features to point out here, mostly in the pyroxene spectra. Some of our pyroxenes have fairly high contents of titanium. This is true predominantly for the augites. I'm showing you on the lower right here, calcium on the y-axis versus titanium on the x-axis. Our augites, and this is just one of the Apollo 17 pyroxene separate example, our augites have markedly higher titanium contents. And the interesting thing to note here is that in this visible region, we see that these higher titanium pyroxenes, that's in the red, have this sort of broad feature here, which we're tentatively attributing to a titanium crystal field band. And we don't see this in the lower titanium pyroxenes. And some of the petrology results suggest that augites co-precipitated with ilmenite and show simultaneous iron enrichment. So it's interesting to note that we see these pretty interesting features down here, and that's something we're going to be looking at a lot more as we go forward with this study. I'm going to move on to the mid-infrared, talk about a few examples of really interesting features that we can see here. You'll notice that we see this feature predominantly due to water, and that shows up predominantly in the plagic clays separates. We're not entirely sure why that is, but it's interesting to note that it's consistent across all four of our samples. You see these sharp features in all the samples around, or between 3 and 4, around 3.5 microns. Those are due to organics and are almost definitely due to sample preparation. There's one stage where we were forced to crush these samples in ethanol, and that's almost definitely due to absorptions from ethanol. A couple of other things to point out. In the 4 to 5 micron region here, plagic clays has a unique absorption, and this is potentially quite important if we can have sensors that cover this wavelength range. We don't in the current state of lunar exploration, but eventually might. Plagic clays can be very difficult to detect from that feature in the sort of 1.3 micron region, but this one potentially might be really useful for detecting plagic clays remotely. So slightly longer wavelength, this is between 5 and 7 microns. Olivine also has a diagnostic absorption. These two peaks here are uniquely due to olivine. And this can be quite useful if you're looking, I can talk about an example where this was quite useful if we have time at the end. And if you're unable to use the sort of 1 micron diagnostic olivine features, these can be quite useful as well. I'll talk a little bit about a little slightly longer wavelength region. This is covering the range between 7 and 9 microns. This is the region where we observe the Christiansen feature, which occurs where the refractive index of your sample is equal to the refractive index of your medium. It manifests itself as a reflectance minimum and an emission maximum. The wavelength of this feature is dependent on your composition. Mafics tend to occur at longer wavelengths, and we're seeing that in our samples here. Plagic clays occurs at a shorter wavelength, and our pyroxenes and olivines occur at longer wavelengths. We're also seeing evidence from multiple components. We're seeing plagic clays and some pyroxene here as well. I should caution that mixing and unmixing in this region for potentially for deconvolution, we heard some of this in some of the talks yesterday, looking at emission spectra. This is a complex process and can be strongly affected by particle size. Ultimately, we're going to be seeing more data from this wavelength region. I'm just showing you a little bit of a sort of a teaser here, if you will. We've measured these samples at less than 125 microns grain size. We're in the process of measuring them at less than 45 microns. So that data is on its way and will be published, like I said, in that manuscript. And I see I've left myself lots of time here, so we'll have plenty of time for questions. I want to summarize what I've said so far. We've conducted a coordinated study of the mineralogy, petrology, and spectroscopy of four lunar basalt samples and mineral separates that have been prepared from them. We have collected reflectance spectra from 300 nanometers out to about 50 microns, where we can trust our data to be reliable. We're working on a manuscript right now, and this data will be available to the community following the peer review process. We intend this to be, you know, useful ground truth for a variety of instruments that are flying or soon to be flown. So we're really working to get this out for and available for the community to use. And one thing I didn't point out in talking about these spectra the first time I showed them is that we also see some effect of potentially from ilmenite in our high titanium samples, where you're noticing that the bulk sample has this really interesting upturn sort of at the long wavelengths, and we're attributing that tentatively to what's going on with the ilmenite sample, which is in purple here. And I think there I will stop and take any questions. Thank you.
Okay, the floor is open for questions for Peter.
It wouldn't look exactly like this. If these bulk sample rock spectra are certainly not going to look like the lunar surface as a whole, where you're seeing predominantly the soils. I showed some of those spectra. Lunar surface will look a lot more like those soils as a whole. However, we will see areas where there are fresh exposures of rocks, and certainly some of those areas will, I would argue, look somewhat like this. You know, you're never probably not going to see a purely rock that's pulverized to this grain size. I would argue that we will see this to a certain extent. Certainly not over the whole lunar surface, but in small areas, yes.
Yeah, Peter, I think the most important aspect of this is that we're going back to ground zero and using the lunar sample to start to unravel what the heck space weathering had really done. Because we've been modeling three ways to hell and back.
Yeah. Yeah, fair point, exactly. These are the place, this is the place you start, and the soils are where you end up. But this is really the place where the unweathered material shows its face, if you will.
Are you going to stop the four rocks that you're covering in this manuscript, or are you going to expand it to cover the whole range of things that you've
As of now, there are no plans to go beyond these four samples. That's a discussion that will have to take place within the team. And mostly with the people that pay the bills.
So you talked about titanium, even though it's in low concentrations, appears to have a strong effect on the, or perhaps having a strong effect on the spectra. What about chromium? Because chromium 3 plus, or even chromium 2 plus or 3 plus, is there enough of it that you have to worry about it?
That's a good question. I don't know that I want to speculate too much on that. We don't see chromium to those concentrations. And some of the chromium absorption features there, I don't think we're going to see broad absorption features like we're seeing for ilmenite. The one place we do see chromium is with this spinel absorption in olivine. But as far as pyroxenes, nothing we've seen in our spectra suggests that yet.
Any other questions? Okay, just one for you. You said the data will be made available. That's on the RELAB website?
Yeah, we haven't really discussed the way this will be released, but once that manuscript goes through the process, we'll make sure it's readily available in an easy-to-access format, because that's really the point of this study.
Excellent. Thank you, Peter.
All right, so now we've got an unintended break. We will reconvene in
exactly 10 minutes at 9:35, so I encourage people to get some coffee or a cup of water from the back, but stay close. So we'll start exactly at 9:35. Thank you. Yeah.
Magnesium purity, but I mean, there can be, depending on the sample, there can be more.